please drop it in the comments. CL, I have to say, I wanted to pull up the video. I didn't get a chance to pull it up, but I ran across on your Facebook page a delivery speech at a graduation that you gave recently.
Yes, ma'am.
It was quite inspiring, I want to say. I loved it.
Yeah, that is truly a blessing. The unique story behind that speech that I gave was I'm Still Standing, but it was a high school graduation commencement speech, and it was my son's graduating class. He was in the audience as well as a graduate. So it really was double dose of excitement, and it just really meant a lot that day.
It's truly special. I'm Still Standing is the title of that. You guys go over to his Facebook page. Is it CL King on your Facebook?
They can find, yep. If they do that, okay, They'll find it. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. You guys go check that out. It's truly inspiring. The whole thing's not on there, but a good portion of it I got to hear was on there. So.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So the first thing I like to do is we talk about this whole show, Dare to Share, is about overcoming your worst to live your best. I like to send a vibe out to the people in the world to let them know that we all make mistakes, but we don't have to live in them. We can pick up, dust ourselves off, forgive ourselves, correct the mistakes, and move forward and live a better life.
Right.
So because we know life is not always cupcakes and rainbows, there's bumps in the road. But we're going to start this show out first, CL, by letting you share a couple of minutes about the things you're most proud of in life, your biggest accomplishments. The right off the bat, we're going to go to the positive things.
Awesome. And that's a great way to start a show. So I might steal this from my show.
All right.
One of the greatest accomplishments that I feel in my life has been, you know, the marriage to my wife and us having 7 children together. We've been married for 26 years. And looking at that truly is an inspiration. Now, it hasn't been 26 years of cupcakes and roses, let me tell you. But I will tell you this, that given my past and given the launching pad that I started on, that is really one of my most amazing feats, that every day I wake up and say, wow, Lord, you were so good to me to help me preserve this thing called marriage and to bring 7 human beings into this world who are productive citizens in society. And then from that, you know, the Lord has opened up many other doors. But I feel like that really is kind of the bedrock, the lifeblood of any of my success. It starts at home. And so I'm thankful for that. That's one of my crowning achievements. Of course, all of my children are amazing. My sixth kid that was that I was speaking at the graduation, he just got accepted into the Army band. He's going to play for the Army. And then we got one more who's a junior. And then maybe Mama and I will have an empty nest and we can just go travel the world like we want to. But yeah, family. This family has truly been the inspiration and blessing, crowning achievement above anything else.
That's amazing. That's a beautiful story. You know, I thought the same way. I have a 9-year gap between my, I have 3, 2 daughters and a son, and there's a 9-year gap between my second daughter and my son. And I thought the same way, get him out, get him into college, let him move into the dorm, and then Mama's free.
Right.
Well, let me tell you how that really works in the real world is my 30-year-old started having grandbabies.
Mm-hmm.
So once those grandbabies came on the scene, Mimsy don't want to go anywhere. I want to be with those grandbabies.
Right.
So I never really got to have that window. So if you haven't started experiencing being a grandpa, run while you can, because they have a way of captivating you and holding you hostage.
Yes, ma'am. Well, 7 kids and 8 grandchildren, I definitely can identify with you. Yeah. So
you already know.
Yes, ma'am. And they, if I knew grandkids were so awesome, I would have just skipped kids and just went straight to grandkids.
Yeah. Well, maybe when you travel the world, you'll have to grab a couple of those grandkids and take them with you.
That'll be a plan for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, see, I'm excited to get into your story because I know a little bit about it. And I know the value you're going to bring to our guests tonight. So I want to start out by asking you, describe to us what it was like for you as a kid, say up to age 10. Describe to us what it was like.
Well, you know, as you know, being a show host, time is really, we're always captured by the grasp of the hands of time. And so to be able to articulate that, with any type of meaning can sometimes be a challenging feat. But I will tell you this, that from birth until 10 and beyond, but up till that point, it was a very dark time for CL. I wasn't CL, I was Chris. I was born into poverty. I was taken away from my mother at 3 years old. When I went back to live with her, we were living on the streets. We were living in abandoned homes. We were eating in soup kitchens and homeless shelters. There, we were exposed to all different types of abuse relative to physical and sexual. And so the landscape and the tapestry for the early part of my life, if you look at it, that's why I said I can't believe, you know, the end state is compared to what it began. And you know, the reality is that I don't blame my mom. I don't blame my dad. But, you know, my dad tried to take my life away, tried to drown me in a tub of water. It was just it was a miserable set of circumstances, one in which I remember those details vividly. This is why I'm so adamant about talking to young people, is that, man, and parents in particular, that those things are embossed in your memory, man. You know, sleeping outside under park benches as a 9-year-old, going in and wandering the streets from sunup to sundown as an 8-year-old. Watching all types of vile acts taking place, drug abuse, all types of things going on as a kid that's not even 10 years old, that wrestles with your psyche. But then I always remember this, that I always thought outside of that, Misty, and said, man, it's not always going to be like this. It's not supposed to be like this. So there's got to be something better. So that was kind of like the launching pad for CL King's life.
What do you think gave you, I mean, looking back now, what do you think it was way back then that kept telling you things have to be better? This can't be the end result. What was it in you telling you that? Was it something you had seen on TV? Was it other family members? You think it was God at an early age? What is it you think gave you that hope?
Well, I can tell you this. Thank you for asking and giving us those various options to choose from. I do believe that greatness is in each and every one of us. I really do. And no, I was not exposed to even slivers of opportunity. It was a real constant of dark, gloomy times. But I do feel like God was working with me at an early age where I could look outside of the circumstances and I could identify that this is not right. Now, I didn't always live with my mom. There was a portion of time I lived with my grandmother. There was a portion of time I lived with my dad. So I had three different environments that I got exposed to. All of them brought their own rough set of circumstances, each environment. But in every one of them, and I experienced trauma in all three, in every one of them, I recognized that God, he was speaking to me. He said, listen, I know you're only 8. I know you're only 7. I know you're only 10, but it's not always going to be like this. And location was important in this journey. Mm-hmm. Location was important. As you know, we can be sometimes in the wrong place at the wrong time. And when the opportunity arose for my location to shift and everything else changed, everything else radically changed. And so I do believe that in the spiritual piece and being spiritually connected with God, that I do feel like he was speaking to me at an early age that, man, in my heart, it wasn't always going to be like that.
Wow. That's a blessing, because as an adult, just, you know, what I see looking in on you is, I guess, a peacefulness about you. You have a peacefulness and I can truly feel the joy. You know, I see it in your smile when you smile. So to hear someone that has such a dark past that you didn't choose, I mean, the past that I, you know, my past is dark, but it's because of choices I made in life.
Right.
You didn't have the opportunity to make your choices. You were dealt this hand of cards, right? So
right.
Someone that was in your position could have easily just let anger and resentment boil and fester and turn you into some other type of person. And instead, you've turned into this joyful, And aren't you a minister as well?
Yes, ma'am. But you know, I don't need a lot of high and lofty titles. I do realize that I'm a messenger, probably even more than a minister, because everyone has a story. And I really do feel like that's what our mission in life is to be, you know, someone say, are you a motivational speaker? I'm a motivational messenger. I'm a motivational impactor. And so I really do feel like that's my purpose in life, is to try to reach those who were traveling down maybe some of the same paths that I was.
Well, that's awesome, because there's a lot of darkness that goes on out there, especially with our teens today. The life they live is much different than the life we grew up with. The generational gaps and changes are just astronomical. The whole mindset. The obstacles that are up against these youngsters today, I just can't even imagine. And it's so easy for them to go down the dark path. But I want there to be a legacy out there. I want there to be media, books, whatever can be left around in the future for them to know that, you know what? Everybody goes through something. Right. It's what you choose to do on the other side of adversity that's going to set you apart as a person and leave your own legacy behind.
Right.
So that's the message, you know, and I really do appreciate people coming on the show, daring to share, being vulnerable, because, you know, pretending to be something you're not never helps anyone.
Never.
So I'm all about the real. So let's get back into your story, CL. I want to talk about, first of all, did you have brothers and sisters?
I did. Biological brothers and sisters. There's five of us. I think I'm nestled somewhere right in the middle. I've got two older siblings and two younger siblings. So I am the anchor. I'm the nexus in the sibling rivalry piece there.
So were all of you trudging around through the parks and running the streets together, or were you kind of placed all over?
All of us have different unique stories. My brother had to spend 15 years in prison, my older brother. My younger sister had to battle with having a multitude of kids at a very young age and not a lot of guidance there. And then my two younger brothers and sisters have a whole host. It's too long to get to into this show, but they both have a whole host of issues that they've had to overcome, jail time, just a whole bunch of stuff. And so, yes, I was nestled somewhere in the middle with all that.
I'm going to ask you, I haven't even gotten past 10 years old yet. And it might, some people out there might think this is a crazy question to ask, you know, a small child, but it's happening every day more and more at a young age. Were you ever suicidal at that young age because of your situation?
I can honestly say, because I'm blessed with I can't remember hardly nothing now, Misty, but in terms of what I wanted to eat for dinner tonight and how to get there. But I do, my childhood is just like vivid templates that I can just see. I can just pull them out like little slats and I can just recall. I don't ever recall being suicidal. I recall being determined. Like,
so you just had something in you.
I remember my sister and I one time walked from one side of Cleveland, Ohio to the other to deliver some drug money. And along the way, we were so hungry. I was a severely malnutrition kid. I was way, way, way underweight. And we walked and we looked in the envelope, one of them brown envelopes. Y'all remember them brown envelopes back in the days. And there was money in there. So we were supposed to go deliver it. But it was such walking from one side of Cleveland to the other is like a day's journey. We wound up shopping for food along the way. And we were hungry. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to survive. I mean, I'm determined. I'm not. I felt like, man, there's going to be a way out of this, even when the situation looks adverse. And so it just seems like I said, slats in my life where I just recall saying, man, we're going to do better than this. There's something more to life than this.
That's good. I know a lot of kids today deal with suicide and it's so prevalent in their minds. Sometimes I wonder in my own mind, I kind of think, you know, when the whole video game, not putting all the blame on video games, but you know, when that whole thing, the whole video game came on the scene where you die, but you have seven lives and you can just go re-up with a pile of coins. I feel like that mentality, these youngsters don't understand that that's not real life.
Right.
that's final. And I think that they don't realize that. And so they use that term, not just that. I see also a lot of youngsters using suicide as leverage.
Right.
Because they know what it will get them.
Yes.
Very manipulative too.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes. And yes, you know, not, I definitely am compassionate to that because I've counseled and worked with people that, have gone through that. But it, at its core, suicide is a very selfish act. It really reflects on it's all about me. And so I felt like in my journeying through that, I wanted to live. I mean, yeah. I can recall, Misty, a kid balling up dope bread and pushing it through the fence to me every day. I can recall that. I can recall them pushing raw eggs through the fence and me thinking running hot water over them would make them boiled. I was just naive like that. I recall it vividly. And I said, you know what? Okay, the egg cracked. It was yolk everywhere. I'm going to go back tomorrow and I'm going to get some more of that bread. I was determined to live. It was just, like I said, God was dealing with me in a different way at that age.
Okay, let's move on after 10. Let's move into your teenage years on up into early adulthood. Tell me, did anything change? At what age did it change?
Yes, I mean, I'm telling you, I went to the Wright Brothers Museum just a few weeks ago, and I felt like, because, you know, I'm always looking for something to speak about. A speaker always needs something to talk about. And so I was there, and what the Wright Brothers spoke to me, the guys who were the first in flight in North Carolina, by the way, Misty, they needed the right environment. They needed a place that was sandy. They needed a place that had wind, and they needed a place with few people. Everybody around the country, there were inventors around the country that were trying to fly, but they weren't in the right environment to fly first, Misty. And so even though I was put in a group home at 11, and I was put in my first foster home was 3, but then I was in a group home at 11, and then another one at 12, and then another foster home, and then another foster home at 13 or 14. That journey was a part of the plan, right? That journey was getting me in the right environment. And so thank God that I got out of the environment that I was in, because I can tell you, environment does matter, y'all. Okay, I'm not saying that you're a product of your environment, that you can overcome anything, but environment matters. Conditions matter. Circumstances matter. Support matters. And so my last foster home was Ruth E. Plowden. You guys have heard me talk about her all the time around the country. My last foster home, my foster mom said, Chris, I know you're a homeless kid. I know your parents abused you. I know you. She gave me the whole laundry list when I moved in, carrying like 2 black hefty trash bags of clothes. That's all I had. She said, I know you've been through all of that. But no matter the adversity, Christopher King, you still can make it. And she set me in a mindset that finally connected with what that kid was visioning when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. And so my foster mom and foster dad, they modeled for me, hey, listen, kid, I know what you've been through, but here's what you can really do. They got me plugged into church on the North Coast, a huge 2,500 member church. They began having me work in the community as a young kid, 14 years old, started a big kids ministry with over 300 kids every Saturday, traveled to Belden, England by the time I was 18 years old, spoke to thousands of people as a young kid, a foster kid, a homeless kid, an abused kid. And so it was just simply somebody saying, in this environment, Chris, you can accomplish whatever you want to, and it doesn't matter what you've been through. And I took my foster mom up on that. I believed her. Now, my foster mom had 83 kids over 30 plus years, and less than 10% of us are doing what I'm doing today. Wow. Now, we all had the same opportunity. You feel me?
Yeah.
We all had the same foster mom.
It's a choice.
We were living in suburbia by that time when I moved there. Mm-hmm. They all had the same opportunities, but it did come down to choice. My mom said, you can choose to use that as an excuse, or you can choose to change the world. And that's what I chose to do, Misty.
Amen to that. You are doing it. You are doing it. I want to go back to this whole, you know, Lauren Michaels Harris, I introduced you to him. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to talk yet. He was a coach of mine. He's a dear friend. But I've heard that similar story. He had like 20 birth mothers young, and he talks about the black trash bag. You know, you got to move in 5 minutes, put what you can, let's go.
Yes.
And I just without having a sense of roots, I can't imagine, because, you know, I'm so connected with my family. I'm so into my family roots and my past. And I always say that when I got out there on cocaine and made all those horrible decisions, that it was those roots that allowed me to find my way home.
Right.
So someone in your position that never had that, and you were just constantly all over the place. I do believe, after hearing you speak, that it was divine intervention, that your environment or your placement in her home was meant to be.
Yes, absolutely. If I could expound on that, I can tell you this, man. My foster mom was a woman of faith. Like I said, we were a stone's throw away from church on the North Coast. Pastor Lewis and Tina Caton, who invested in this little black nappy-headed kid from the hood and taught me how to go back to the hood and pull kids out and teach them about Jesus. Here's what I can say to you. Even as a foster kid, there were times, because I was a foster kid, I was a kid of the system till I was 18. There were times when you recognized, hey, I'm not her blood kid. My foster mom had her own kids. They were all grown and stuff, but I knew that I wasn't hers. And you could even sometimes see that. You could even, not that my foster mom treated us bad at it by any stretch, but you could just know that this wasn't your family.
Right.
So my foster mom let me get the idea that, hey, listen, Chris, you're not going to stay here. This is not it for you. Okay. This is not going to be your legacy, just being a foster kid and hanging out with foster mom and all that kind of stuff. I'm teaching you for the generation which is yet to come. So I left. I'm 745 miles away from Mom Plowden's house now. I'm gone and raising my own children and realizing that she equipped in me for those 4 or 5 years I lived with her enough. It's still residual to this day. I still parent just like Ruth E. Plowden. I still worship just like her. And so, yeah, even though I wasn't a blood child, and even though sometimes that does play on your psyche, I realized that was the season I was in. And now I'm feasting off of the fruits of that time in that vineyard.
Right. Well, you know, I think two things I want to say, if I can remember them. The first, the first one is, the thing about, you said you were introduced to a church in North Carolina, and that opened your eyes. You started learning, you know, the faith. You started getting embedded into that community. The good news to everyone out there hearing this is that you don't need a foster mom for that opportunity. You can make that choice and just seek a church out and go.
That's right.
You know, so you're being taught now the things that worked for you, for CL. And, you know, give it a try, you guys. Go find a church this Sunday. Just see how you feel. Go in there. Make some friends. You know, it's free. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Try it. You have nothing else to lose, right?
Right. Just for clarity, that connection initially with Church on the North Coast, they're in Lorain, Ohio. So that was my first experience with church and ministry and stuff. And that's where I got connected and that's where my faith was built. Now I'm living in North Carolina and still, you know, it carries on to this day.
Got you. And just real quick, how old were you? You said 4 years with that foster mom. At what age was that?
So I went there. I was in the system forever, but I went to Mom Plowden's house. I was either 13 or 14.
Those are very impressionable years. I can only even imagine the level of bullying. I mean, before you got into foster care, let's go back to those first 10 years of your life when you were roaming the streets. Were you even afforded an education? Did you even go to a school? And if you did, was it ever a regular school?
It was.
Or were you skipping around?
What I do recall of school is that the educators knew that we were living in squalor. Because they would always give me double breakfasts and double lunches. They would bring me into a closet, Misty, and have me pull my shirt up because I would have these crazy welts. At times, when they would bleed, they would stick to my shirt. Because what we got whooped with was not, it wasn't just your traditional black leather belt. It was something that's a car fan belt is made out of. And I'm 46 years old and I still have some of these welts on my body. And so, yeah, I went to school, and school was maybe a safe haven for me. School was a safe place. And so that's why I'm so big on education and educators and teachers. And I trumpet and triumph and trumpet them, you know, that, hey, listen, we got to support these folks who take care of these kids that are have so much diversity and so many different backgrounds. But yeah, school for me was a safe place. And that's what I recall it. I recall it a place where I could get something to eat. Yeah, you know what I mean? It was just, I said, man, I can get some victuals there at the school.
There you go. Well, it just amazes me, the resiliency of children, because, you know, you think about just regular everyday hardships and things that are on the kids' minds, things going on they're hearing in the media and the news, maybe family problems. But to take someone like what you were living through, like literally living on the streets and trying to learn, you know, trying to have the discipline to learn things, to be able to get along. I didn't have social skills to know how to get along with the other kids. I mean, I can just only imagine. And I do believe in my heart that those that rise above and rise through it were meant to. And right. They're just very special, special people that are here to give back. And that's my whole business, is step up and speak out. Because like I said, it's what we do on the other side. And if we sit on those experiences and we don't share them out of shame or guilt or whatever it is we're hiding behind, we're not helping anyone. And instead, we're hurting ourselves.
You're right.
But when we step up and speak out and share these things, we're able to understand that we can all overcome our worst. It doesn't matter what level you're at. We don't have to compare stories with each other.
Right.
It's truly about overcoming. And I just thank you so much for diving in and getting honest with us.
Yes, ma'am. The reality is that we all have a story, and I'm thankful for that story. I probably wouldn't change very much of it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, going forward, so did you graduate high school?
Oh, yes. Mom Plowden wasn't playing that. You got up. Listen, there's a couple things you did in Mom Plowden's house. You did chores. Right. We all there were six foster kids there, six foster boys from the hood. It didn't matter how big you was, how tough you was. You did your chores. Number two, you didn't sleep in on Sunday. You getting up and going to church. In this politically correct age, you can't maybe make a foster child do it. But in Mom Plowden's house, we went to church. And then the third thing was you going to school. Don't be coming acting like you got a hangnail and that you can't go to school. No, we went to school. So, yes, I graduated from Admiral King High School. I was the best dressed, most likely to succeed, most musically talented. I was all throughout my yearbook, man. Starred in the school dramas and plays. It was an amazing time. Yes, ma'am.
You got your time to shine. Good for you. I'm really happy that turned out like that. Later on, when you became an adult and you started paving your own way in life, what was your relationship like with your mom and dad? Did you have one with them? Did you resent them? Did you go through a period of anger? And if so, how did you get through it?
Yeah, I will be honest with you. I was bulldog mad at all three of them. My biological grandmother, who was my dad's mother, my dad, and my mother. I was absolutely furious with them because, number one, through that time, because you got to remember, I left the front door wide open at age 11 when I ran away from my mom finally, and I walked out. From that point until age 18, these people were not a part of the journey. Like, you know, weekend visitations or, you know, seeing your parents in the group home come pick you up, none of that. I was truly a foreigner in a strange land. And so I was bitter with my grandmother. You know, my grandmother knew some things that my dad was doing to me, and how he was a minister, but he was a minister. Yeah. You know what I mean? That was just a cloak. And beating your son, closed fist punching him, you know, holding him in tubs of water. That's not ministry. And so I was mad with her for allowing that to happen and knowing it was happening. I was mad with her for some of the stuff she did to me, putting me out with the dogs in the extended garage outside, detached garage in Cleveland, Ohio, in the middle of winter. Silly stuff. I was mad with my mother for allowing men to come into the house and take advantage of my sister and I. I was mad that we'd never had anything. I was furious with them. And then, I felt a little self-righteousness. Like, look at me. I'm a successful Marine. I got beautiful kids living a glorious house, make all this money, and look at what despite y'all look. Them. Right. Yeah. But the Lord told me I had to back it up. I had to back it up because number one, bitterness, it's a root. And you can't let that stuff get down in your heart. You could pass it on to your next generation. So I had to reconcile with my grandmother before she passed away. And I did that. I reconciled and I said, listen, you know, I just wanted to love you. My dad passed away while I was in the group home. So we never really got to reconcile. My mother is still alive. And I will tell you this, that, you know, you can have a relationship without having a close relationship. Can I put it like that? And sometimes that's just necessary for your well-being. And what I mean by that is I don't know the demons and the struggles that she went through as a kid because I'm hearing she did. And so she still is in 1986. She's still wrestling with stuff from night. And I can't go back there. It's not good for my mental health. It's not good for my family. It's not good for me. And so we're kind, we're cordial. I honor my mother because the Bible tells me to. But outside of that, that's it.
Have you forgiven her?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The problem is that I don't think she's forgiven herself because the situation is perpetual.
Right.
Her pain, her behavior is still continuing, and she's 70 years old. So what she's drowning in, it's like, you know, I've tried to talk to her. You know, like I said, I'm the anchor in the family. I'm the middle kid. Mm-hmm. I've tried to talk to her. I said, man, we gotta break this curse. We gotta break this cycle. But unfortunately, whatever happened with her is so deep rooted that she can't break it. So I have an obligation to this ranch right here. I can't go back.
Get your whole house full there of your own.
Right. I can't go and rehabilitate and resuscitate something that is you got to want to change too. And so I just continue to pray for her. I continue to honor her. But our relationship is a distant one.
I have a lot of guests that come on the show, and oftentimes they're first time sharers. They're first learning to open up and be transparent and speak their story. And oftentimes they'll ask me, how do I forgive the person that hurt me so badly? How do I even begin that journey? What advice, CL, could you give our audience today? A first step. What would a first step be for someone like that, just discovering their pain and wanting to make amends?
Well, I can definitely tell you that from a person who has plenty of scars, that recognizing the forgiveness is not necessarily about them. It's not necessarily about me forgiving my mom and that settles our issues. The forgiveness comes so that I can be free.
Exactly.
See, because some people walk around with bitterness and anger and hurt feelings, and they're chained to that. They're shackled to the anger and hurt. They're justified. But just because it's right, that doesn't mean that it's righteous, Misty.
Right.
And so He who the Son has set free is free indeed. So forgiveness is liberation. So whether I forgive you and you change your behavior, that's on you. If you still want to act like a dingbat after I've forgiven you, it's on you. But I'm free from that curse of bitterness. I'm free from it. I'm like, bless you, Lord, be with you. We may not have Thanksgiving dinner every year, but you're free from any ill feelings on me. Because the Bible gives us clear instructions. Before, if you know your brother's got aught or you got aught with somebody, before you, there's a lot of people worshiping in church that need to go fix some stuff before they go and put their gifts down, huh? Yeah, right. So I said, man, I'm not going to let this legacy, this checkered past of mine affect my future. So I'm free. And like I put that caveat in there. It does not see forgiveness. Some people think that forgiveness means we got to start having cranberry sauce and turkey legs at dinner time together. Well, not turkey for Javi. We got to have vegan for my man Javi in the comments. But the truth of the matter is that you can forgive someone, you can love them, and still have barriers to protect yourself.
Boundaries.
Yes. Boundaries. Absolutely. And so that's both ways. You don't have to continue to tear off scars and reopen wounds and allow yourself to get hurt and vulnerable again. You don't have to do that. You can forgive, be liberated, and go on with your life, honey.
So I think if I heard you right, you're saying, so the first step for someone would be just to recognize that forgiveness is for them.
Right. It's for you. Okay. You own that.
To recognize. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So I want to ask you now to get vulnerable with the audience. I want you to think really hard about a time that you're daring to share with us that maybe was your rock bottom. It might be your darkest hour. It might be a secret you've held in. Whatever it is, it might be a turning point that 30 years later you look back and realize was a turning point. But I would like for you to share with the audience, CL, a dark time in your life, because I want others to see that we can all pull ourselves up. And by sharing our stories, you know, we inspire each other. So do you have something in mind that you might would be daring to share with us?
Absolutely.
Okay.
They say that loneliness and boredom can be a casualty of war. And I think the darkest time of my life was when Christine Shedrick, my grandmother, who I still love, who has gone on to her reward, took me down to social services in Cleveland, Ohio, and dropped me off at the front door with 50 cents, two quarters, and said, I cannot take care of you no more. Now, I wasn't a kid using drugs. I wasn't a kid out gangbanging. I wasn't a kid, you know, robbing and carrying on. I was just a kid, man. And to have someone who is your blood, she was my dad's mother, so that's my biological grandmother, to drive me down to Cleveland, Ohio, inner city, and drop me off in the front doorsteps of social services was the absolute lowest time of my life. I don't tell that story often, probably been 10 or 15 years since I've told it, but it's tucked away. That added to the bitterness with forgiveness with her, because I'm just like, how can you do this, man? How come we couldn't have worked through this together? Because my grandmother took in other of her grandkids, and
you were a good kid. You weren't a problem child.
I was just a normal kid. You know
how
what I mean?
Old were you?
At that time, I think I was 9.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what happened to you when she left you there?
I got into the system. I got again put into the system with a social worker. But before that, maybe I was 10, but before that, I wandered the streets for several days. I can't tell you exactly how many days it was, but I didn't go into social services. I wandered the streets as a 9-10 year old kid walking around the streets of Cleveland. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm all alone. This is it. No family, no provisions, no protection, no nothing, man. And that was a moment that stuck with me for many, many years until I finally, you know, worked up the courage. I obviously needed to go to that building. And I think my social worker's name was Susan Abercrombie. I still, like I told you, I still could just see the plates of situations in my life. Her name was Susan Abercrombie. And then there I was thrust back into the social services system. And you know, that's what hurt, man, was that your own family member would take you and just not even walk me in, just say, this is it. I can't do nothing else with you. And that was the lowest point probably in my life.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And I want to ask you, so from that moment, you've probably suffered a lot of abandonment issues. And I want to ask specifically, I know you've celebrated many years. You're most proud of your marriage and the team that you guys are with raising your own children. How did that abandonment or the anger or the resentment from your past come into play in your marriage? Because oftentimes those suitcases we haul in the door when we move in together, that baggage we bring along, you know, it's stress. And Yeah. I want to know for the audience, because we all are going to go through it at some point.
That's a great
What kind of strain, and how did you deal with it?
That's a great question. And that's a great question, Misty. I will say this, that my wife and I got married when we were 19. We started having kids when we was 19. Seemed like we was having kids every year till we were 40. She had her own family history. We didn't know each other very well, very long. We dated for a few months and found out destiny was on the way. So I said, I'm not bringing another child in this world. We getting married. We doing it. So anyway, she didn't know. She knew I was a foster kid, but that's about the height of what she knew. She didn't know about sexual abuse. She didn't know about physical abuse. She didn't learn about this stuff until I was 45 years old. And
I have to interrupt you. I'm sorry. Was it because you were ashamed to tell her, or was it because you didn't feel she needed to know?
A combination of this being in church work, right? There's this perception ministers are perfect. They don't have any flaws. You know what I mean? You got to carry yourself a certain way. And we were headlong at 19 years old. We got headlong into ministry in our church here in North Carolina. Not the one we're in now, but another one. We were building churches. We were in the community. We were teaching Bible studies. We were doing home groups at 19, 20 years old. We were rocking and socking. And that went on for you know, up until now. Yeah. And we never, it was like, in church, I tell people this, you're talking the right language. Stop pretending like you something that you ain't, right? We go to church, we put all this good stuff on, and really we're full of dead man's bones. And the reality is that I never, ever dealt with that stuff. So there were manifestations in my marriage, flaws in my character, flaws in my behavior. I nowhere remotely did anything like the stuff that was done to me, but there were still cracks. You following what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're like, right, why is this happening? And so we finally were able to unearth that together. And doing that illuminated her eyes, like, okay, so everybody sees CL King in a 3-piece suit. His name is on the marquee. He the man. And they didn't realize that you still wrestle with this stuff. That's why I'm not against therapy. I'm not against communicating your issues, because I just got thrust after I left Mom Plowden's house in the Marine Corps down here, full-time job, full-time marriage, full-time ministry, bam. So I left all that wake of stuff.
And never dealt with it.
Never dealt with it. Never.
Yeah.
And so, so I'm 46. So just a year ago did we actually say, all right, here's why this is happening. Here's why this is happening. Here's why this is happening. And we're like, oh, the light bulbs in both of our heads is going off.
Do you feel like it's something that you should organically let come out on its own time? Or if you're someone out there struggling with, say you're in a marriage and you've never confided in your spouse about some things that are tormenting your soul, or do you feel like you should pursue it and find a way to let your spouse in on it so they can be of assistance to you?
Yes, I feel so much liberation now, because how do you tell your wife, hey babe, you know, I'm a man, I'm a Marine, I'm the toughest dude on this block, but I was molested as a child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's not something you just bring up at the dinner table. And so
do you think it should just come? You think that the person should wait and let that come out in its own time? Or do you feel that you should pursue?
I feel like I feel like you should pursue, because maybe I would not have. My wife's been through a lot. She had to put up with me for 27 years now. So, so I ain't no halo over this cranium right here. Right.
Yeah.
And I think now, the revelation is, oh, OK, well, we were responding wrong because you were trying to pretend like everything was good to go, but then you were acting in ways that wasn't good to go. We got this church image where people are expecting you to be good to go. And it, you know what I mean? So we had these warring factions, and I couldn't get it out of my mouth to tell you, hey, look, I wrestle with this. I struggle with this. This is still a painful element in my life. So yeah, man, when you start seeing these things manifest in your marriage, if you start seeing these things create potholes in your marriage, it's time to deal with them. Because what happened in the previous generation, I watched it with my grandmother's generation, I watched it with my mother's generation. Family secrets, nobody talked about it. It was hidden under the rug. And everybody messed up in the family, right? And so for us now, obviously I didn't go into the deepest, darkest details with my children, but even they know that dad has had some struggles and dad struggles as a kid. Now, I only got four kids left in the house. The rest of them grown. The four that are here are grown. So maybe one day they'll all get out. But what I will tell you, Misty, is that piece right there of saying, hey, listen, this is why dad has got these flaws. And let me tell you something. I was trying to cover it up with religion. You know, I was trying to cover it up with my ministry. I was trying to cover it up, right? I was trying to cover it up with activity. And really, reality is I just needed to get it out so y'all would know how to help me. So I say pursue it.
I say pursue it, too, because, you know, when I came home from prison, I had already written my book. I wrote it in jail and I sat on it for 9 years because I was too ashamed for anyone in my new life to know about the person in my old life. I was ashamed of her, and not even realizing that the person I was in my present life was because of that person in my past. All the horrific things I put myself through by my own choices in life, you know, and it wasn't until I learned about transparency and found the courage to step up and speak my story that I realized that shame and that guilt can be left at the door. That fear can be left at the door once you realize it's no longer about you. Right. Once you've survived all those horrible things, it's not about you anymore. You're a survivor. You're actually an authority on it now.
Yeah.
So it's not even about you. What it's about is that wisdom and how you can be of service to someone else. And the very first time I used my story to lift someone else up, it opened my eyes to a brand new world.
Ooh.
And that freedom and that service work, that's where life is, man. That truly, it's not about driving that BMW and impressing somebody by not letting them know about your stinking past.
Right.
It's about stepping up to who you are in the present, including that person from the past, and then sharing with someone else.
Misty, can you give me a like 10 seconds to just piggyback off of that? Let me just tell you, because I've been in ministry for a long time. I mean, when I got to Miles Plowden's house, we got thrust in church. I got involved in ministry at an early age, 14, 15 years old. Here's what I want to say to those of you that are in ministry, in church, doing, you know, your calling and your passion. That sometimes we as leadership in church create this expectation that, okay, well, that happened. Jesus took care of it. And now you're good to go. I mean, I've got the Holy Ghost. I've been baptized. The Lord loves me. I done preached all over the country. But let me tell you something. I carry, like you said, the suitcases. I carried them invisible suitcases with me every pulpit I went to, every conference I went to. And I'm just like, well, I guess I can't deal with this because I shouldn't. I felt almost guilty for wanting to deal with the stuff that I had hidden because I'm a saint of God who, you know, you're redeemed. But the reality, what we've discovered is depression is real. Anxiety is real. Those things are real. And we can shout and tambourine those things all day long, but we still have to recognize that people still have issues. Mine was a mental issue. You know what I mean? I was carrying this stuff around in my mind and in my heart, and I needed to deal with it. And so don't make church seem like we're perfect people. And, you know, even don't feel guilty if you're in leadership or ministry or doing something for God and you've got some issues that you still need to deal with. I thank God that He allowed me to have a wife that has helped me through that.
I was going to say, it seems like you were blessed to find her young and that she's been understanding. Sia, we're running out of time. I want to be able to get to letting the audience know how they can find you, what you have to offer. And then at the very end, I want you to leave us with a couple of wisdom tips. But Where can people find you? Is it clkingspeaker.com on the screen there?
Right. They can see, they can find me right here on your screen with you. Don't look here too hard. Am. Yeah, that's right. Hey. No, clkingspeaker.com. I have an international podcast. I'm a multi-level life coach, but my heartbeat is speaking and inspiring people. I've spoken to almost over 400,000 people throughout the world. And yeah, so we host conferences, conventions, leadership training, strategic, all about this one thing. No matter the adversity, you still can make it. We teach people that no matter how rock bottom you are, no matter how much you done messed up in life, there's still a way and a path for you to make it. And so that's what our mission is. Our mission is impacting one life, one day at a time.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. I love it. What's the name of your podcast?
It's called Impacting Life 24/7. And let me parenthetically insert that we got some of the highest download rates when Miss Misty was on there. Miss Misty rocked the house on our podcast. And so I said, we've been staying connected in Misty's story. When we did the pre-interview with Misty, me and my co-host, our jaws was just like, what? I said, man, I wish me and Misty could just go on tour and just rock the stage together, because
wouldn't that be awesome?
I'd be jumping off the stage with my hair on fire.
Let's do it. I'm down. You know, I've been thinking about starting up now that some of the restrictions are being lifted. I've been wanting to go on a church tour with my book and just get out there and start, you know, stepping up and speaking out to youth, because I think that's where that seed needs to be planted. Like I said, I was fortunate. I had a good upbringing, because when I made the bad choices that I made in my life, I was able to come back to those deep-rooted morals.
Right.
And I'm thankful for that.
Yes, ma'am.
We should talk. Let's talk.
Let's do it. Let's collaborate. This thing is collaboration, sister.
Collaboration. So if anyone wants to listen to your podcast, can they access that through this website, or do they need to go somewhere
else? No, they can go to our website. They can go on all the major outlets. Just go to Impacting Life 24/7. Look for my mug there. And but it's on every major. It's on like 27 different platforms. So, but yeah, our website lead is a link to the podcast itself.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, you're such a joy. Like I said, you are very inspirational. Just your presence and your smile, it makes me feel like, you know, the world's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because you believe it. And I see in your eyes and I hear in your voice that you believe it.
Yes, ma'am.
And if that doesn't give you hope and inspiration, guys, I mean, my goodness, come on. Look where this guy's been. Look what he's been through. And he chose not to let that be his path. He made his own path instead.
Mm-hmm. Amen. I'm thankful for that. Yes, ma'am.
All right. Before we get off of here, I do want to give you an opportunity for about 1 minute to speak to all those foster kids out there right now, or any adult that's been through the foster system that might be struggling with some pain or some anger and resentment. Give me about 1 minute of some inspiration to those people.
Yes, ma'am. I can give it to you in 1 minute, 60 seconds. Here's what I want you to understand. The Statue of Liberty is green for a reason, because the outside coating of the Statue of Liberty, the skin is only the width of 2 pennies, ladies and gentlemen. That's the outside. But the inside was formed and made by a different architect. It was the guy who created the Eiffel Tower. So though the outside may be looking like it's rough, the inside can withstand hurricane force winds. Here's what I want you to understand. Don't allow what's happening to you to determine what's happening through you. See, because what's in you is greater than what's happening around you. When you look at the Statue of Liberty, it's ugly, it's discolored, but guess what? She's still standing, baby. After 100+ years, she's still standing. And so just get what's you is on the inside, y'all. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Your greatness is right in here, and nobody can take it away from you. So no matter what the adversity is, you still can make it.
That is beautiful. Oh my God, you have such a gift. So, boom, like here, mic drop. It was beautiful.
Yes, ma'am.
I got chill bumps.
Yes, ma'am.
I love it.
Well, praise God.
Thank you so much for being here. We are out of time, CL. You guys jump over to his website, check him out. He is truly inspirational. Get him booked to do some kind of speech for your business. Bring him to your high school graduation. He's going to lift these kids up. Thank you guys for saying a great show. I appreciate it. Everyone's given such great feedback here. Thank you all for being here. Until next time, go out and bless somebody else. Love you. Bye.